T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
I wanna tell you, baby, the changes I've
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back with you on the John Chuckery Show. Hanging out, Raw Monday. Final hour of the program, Brown Liquor Music Hour. Chuckery always gets the first request. I heard this the other day on my playlist. Carpenters do a very good version of this too. This is written by Burt Bacharach, superstar. A little Luther to get us going here tonight. Chuck Rose with the first request. 404-741-0929. That's the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. Leave us a comment there if you will. Yes, butter on fries is a thing. I'm telling you, if you went up to Hagee's chocolate and little like soda shop, I'm telling you, they make the fries and they put the pad of butter on it. So I'm telling you, it's so good. Just let it melt. Like, get the little pads and let it melt all down on the fries. Somebody said, like, chili and cheese. Yeah, that's too much sometimes, you know? I mean, a little bit of that goes, like, a long way. And then you lose the fry kind of taste to it all. You know, you get the chili and the cheese at that point. If I want, you know, the only thing about chili and cheese fries is, if I want chili and I want cheese, I can just have chili and cheese, right? I don't need to mix the fries in it. And by the way, I don't mind doing the fries in the Frosty. Fries in the Frosty doesn't bother me too much either. Don't forget the Radio.com app. Download that on your device to make sure that you catch us on the go. Social media is all at 929 The Game, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. As always, give us a follow on our personal Twitter pages. That's at JMCH316, at JMCH316. That, of course, your water cooler talking points 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else that is out there. He'll spin the hits the rest of the way. Jarvis in the building, at Jarvis D90, at Jarvis D90. Let's get to our NFL squib kick.
Taking a look at the NFL with the squib kick with John Chuckery, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
So one of Cam Newton's former teammates, guard Greg Van Roten. I'm not going to say rotten because that's R-O-T-T-E-N. I'm going to say Roten, Van Roten. Spent the last 3 years with Cam in Carolina. He was on Sirius XM's NFL radio and was talking about his former quarterback. And by the way, Van Roten is with the Jets now. He signed as a free agent with them. Of course, now he's in the same division as Cam Newton. Here's what he had to say about Cam. He said, quote, what does he bring to the Patriots? It's definitely terrifying to think if Cam Newton's healthy and he's in Belichick's offense. You know, in my division, it could be a long year for the other teams because he's a game changer. He came into the league. You know, he's a league MVP, brought a team to the Super Bowl. He's just built differently than a lot of other quarterbacks. He's a headache to game plan for, so when he's healthy, you can stop the run from him, but then you got to defend the pass. You can stop the pass, well, then you've got to account for the run. So it's basically pick one thing and he'll do the other. And then you couple him with Belichick, who only cares about winning, and Cam really wants to prove himself. So it's definitely a recipe for disaster for the rest of the league if they can figure it out. Now, look, I've said many times before on this show, station, everything else, Cam Newton's the most physically gifted person to ever play quarterback. He's the most physically gifted person to ever play quarterback, NFL, college, whatever. He's a unique breed, tremendous athlete, and as good as you could ever ask for. You know, so No surprise there. What could really be interesting is, does he come in with a chip on his shoulder this year? Does he really have a chip on his shoulder to want to prove himself and say that, look, I've been, you know, healthy, unhealthy in the past, and now I am healthy, and just, I don't know. There's a lot of ways that this could go. Could end really well. It could end not so well. I don't know. I mean, there's different ways it could go. But if he's, you know, if he's good to go and he's healthy and he's got Bill Belichick, could be a lot of fun in that division. Could be a lot of fun. I you know, again, I don't buy Buffalo. I certainly don't buy the Jets. You know, the Dolphins are not there yet either. So, you know, if they, you know, he doesn't have to be Tom Brady. No one's asking him to be Tom Brady. But, boy, I mean, it could be fun to watch what Belichick does with him offensively. It's definitely one of those things that I think a lot of people are intrigued by seeing, okay, what can this guy do? You know, and this is going to be one of those things that think about, look, the legacy's already written for Belichick and Brady. But it is fun to think about, okay, what do those two guys do? Because they both have good situations, right? What do I mean by that? Well, Brady obviously going down to Tampa. You know, it's obviously a good situation. He gets with a guy who is obviously a very good coach in Bruce Arians. Guys work with quarterbacks. So he's got lots of weapons down there. You know what I mean? So if he goes down there and wins, you know, it could be a, you know, a real feather in his cap. Then Belichick, you know, of course, just picked him up a quarterback who's got a lot to prove. You know, he's not going with his young guy, but he's got a quarterback who's got a lot to prove for, which could be very good for him too. So a lot of ways to see these two guys now separated into what they can do individually. Not that it's completely individual, because Belichick's got to have Cam play well, but I mean, you know his defense is going to play well. Just a lot of different ways it could go. It should be fun to watch.
All right.
So the NFL has unveiled this Oakley mouth shield. Have you seen this yet, this new helmet that they've got? So it's got the face shield. Teams will be getting it within the next week here. You know, you look at the drawings of it and the way that it works. Now, this was developed by Oakley. Okay, now they already do the visors, you know, that the sunglass company, right? They already do the visors and stuff like that. So now they were asked to develop this for the COVID-19. They say Dr. Alan Sills, in talking about the new helmets and trying to keep players safe, he's the NFL's chief medical officer, quote, "That's certainly what we're going to encourage, and we hope that we're going to land on a product design that's something that everyone would want to wear because they'll see the value and want the additional protection without any detriment to performance." Now, basically, it doesn't look like anything more than just like a plastic mouth guard. I mean, am I missing something that's like special or unique, or is there something weird or something like that I'm missing? It's just like a plastic covering over the lower part of the mouth with some slots in it to breathe through. Now, there are guys that are not necessarily for the idea of having any kind of face shield. It says the mouth shield has already been distributed by the Rams and the Chargers. Says the two biggest concerns to date have been visibility and breathability. Quote, "We've only had it on a few players. We have 2,500 players in the league, but I was surprised that claustrophobia has not been an issue yet. I think it will be when we have more players testing them." J.J. Watt, he said he's against the idea of wearing a face shield. Quote, "My second year in the league, I thought it'd be cool. I put a visor on my helmet. I was like, it looks so cool. I want to put a visor on. I had it on for about 3 periods of practice, and I said, take this sucker off. I'm going to die out here. So now you're going to put something around my mouth? You can keep that. If that comes into play, I don't think you're going to see me on the field." Now, we've said before about guys, when you start to alter the helmets, they get very sensitive about that. They get very touchy about the idea of playing around with the helmet. This, of course, is a safety protocol, but they do get touchy when you start talking about, you know, putting this kind of helmet on people. Trying to see one of the other quotes on there. But I don't know. I mean, they got to do something, right? I mean, guys are not going to have a choice when it comes to all of this. Now, the chairman of the NFL's engineering committee, Dr. Jeff Crandall, says, quote, I don't know that there's a direct percentage that anyone's come up with because a laboratory is not on field. This is talking about they've done some internal testing. They sprayed particles of fluid to represent droplets expelled by players, and they're trying to see how much blockage they get out of it. There's lots of things that players do in the field that are not easily replicated in the laboratory, but it's a significant blockage to transmission of droplets. There is no straight pathway through the face or shield for a droplet to be transmitted. It says, while Oakley isn't the official supplier of the NFL, there are other manufacturers of face shields, and players may end up using other brands as well. This according to Rennie Anderson, saying that probably the perfect milieu or petri dish in which to transmit the virus, given that contact sports involves a lot of players, they're hoping that these different safety measures are going to, you know, lead to a safer environment and reduce potential risk out there. So, I don't know. I mean, look, we'll have to see. Will guys like it? I don't know. I mean, they're going to have to do something, right? And guys are going to be against it, but there's no way they're going to let them just go out there and go without. All right, Dak Prescott and the Cowboys have not had any talks since March, according to Todd France. Says, while things can change quickly, right now Prescott has signed the exclusive franchise tag tender worth $31.4 million back on June 22nd, which guaranteed he would not miss any training camp whenever that happens. But without a long-term deal by 4 o'clock this coming Wednesday, he'll play the season on that tag, and the sides will not be able to talk again until January. So they haven't had any talks since March. Not sure why they would have any more talks, but again, I guess anything could happen, as they say. Said if the franchise put the tag on him again next year, Cowboys would be paying him $37.7 million. Think about that number, $37.7 million for Dak Prescott. There better be a whole lot of W's behind all of that. All right, so, you know, as some of these conferences are, you know, changing up when they're going to start, you know, the ACC said no sports until September 1st. We're not getting conference games in a couple of the thing. There's talk about the NFL may be interested in trying to scoop up some Saturdays and play, some of their games out there. Say that the league could recapture plenty of lost game day stadium revenue by carving out games from the Saturday windows and featuring them on Saturdays as well. And if the networks aren't able or willing to pay for the extra games given the financial realities of pandemic, the league could sell the rights to a streaming provider or possibly sell the games directly to consumers under its existing preseason game pass model. So this is what we talked about earlier, is the fact that, you know, would they want to get NBC involved in a, not just a Sunday night game, but get a Saturday night game as well? You know, albeit probably without fans or very limited fans and things like that. But, you know, and this is where the NFL has, you know, do people get, you know, some people don't like college football on Friday because they say it eats into high school. Some people don't like the NFL on Saturday because they don't want it to interfere with college. Some people are just purists that they want NFL football to just stay on Sundays, and that's it. Now, again, Monday night, I get Thursday night, but I'm talking about, like, on traditional either high school or college nights, they don't want NFL football on there. But I think the reality is that, you know, you very well may have something like that, you know, happen at this point. Because we don't know when the college football season is going to start. Right now, as we keep saying, with the NFL, it's damn the torpedoes for, you know, NFL football. They're going ahead full steam as is. They're not unless they're forced to have to change up the way that they got to do business. They're going full steam ahead on it. So, but it is interesting to think that if there is a void, people are going to want their football, knowing that it's coming. Maybe the NFL can go in there and scoop up a few prime time TV spots and pick up a few extra bucks. All right, when we get back, we're going to rank the four professional sports coaches in this town by who's most likely to win the championship first versus last. We'll talk about that next. This is John Chuckwa Show, hanging out on a Monday, Sports Radio, Nights on the Game, and on the Radio.com app.
Think of younger days when I lived for my life. Was everything a man could want to do. I could never see tomorrow. I was never told about the sorrow. And can you mend a broken heart?
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, back at it on the John Chuckwa Show. Brownaker Music Hour rolling right along. 404-741-0929. That is our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to leave us a comment there. Don't forget the radio.com app that we can always catch us when you're on the go. Social media at 929 The Game. Reach myself at JMCH316. He's at, excuse me, Jarvis D90. Don't forget, coming up tomorrow night, this will be at 9:20 tomorrow night, we'll talk to the enforcer, Double A, Arn Anderson. He is going to join us. It'll be a lot of fun. It's hard to think about how long ago the Horsemen. I mean, that's 84, 85, 86. God almighty. Phew. Man, long time ago. All right, so as Atlanta United got back into action over the weekend, of course, expectations for them, expectations for the Braves, even in this shortened 60-game season, you know, a lot of people will tell you that they believe that Dan Quinn is in kind of do-or-die mode, that either they've got to be a playoff team or they've got to, you know, I don't know, be highly competitive or else he's going to be gone. And certainly the Hawks coming off of what was a disappointing year. But, you know, expectations starting to ramp up a little bit. You know, people saying, okay, is this, you know, this team should be at least a playoff team come next year, right? I mean, at some point they got to start winning some games to get to that. So I asked the question, how would you rank the four professional coaches? So you got the Braves, the Hawks, Atlanta United, and the Falcons. How would you rate the coaches for each of those as far as from who's most likely to win the next championship for this town to the furthest away from winning a championship to this town? So I've got Lloyd Pierce at number four. I don't think that he and the organization are ready anytime soon to certainly win a title. I also believe, too, that I think there's a lot of questions about whether or not it will be actually Lloyd Pierce that will lead this team when it gets ready to be really good. You know, it's comparable to, you know, for a team that wants to be like Golden State, think about Mark Jackson to Steve Kerr and that transition. You know, Mark Jackson wasn't the guy winning the titles. That was Steve Kerr when they finally got that good. So I think the franchise and the organization and he are the furthest away from it. I've got Snitker and the Braves at number three, and this is where we start to get a little bit controversial. Do the Braves have enough talent to win the World Series? Absolutely. They have one of the best rosters in baseball. Yeah, there's a reason why they're looked at as, you know, arguably the second best team in the National League behind the LA Dodgers. But I don't have the kind of confidence in the manager that a lot of other people do. And I look because of history. You know, the same manager that pitched Charlie Liebrandt in 1991 instead of pitching his 20-game winner in Tom Glavine It's also the same guy who pitched Dallas Keuchel last year instead of pitching the guy with the third best. And you can say, oh, that was Bobby Cox and that was Snicker. That's my point exactly. That you just made my point. If you say that, then you completely made my point. Because it's the same guy. And he put a different name on, different number on, but it all comes from the same lineage out there. And I just don't know that when you have to manage in a phone booth come the playoffs. Everybody likes to talk about long series. This, that, and the other. You know, on one hand, everybody talks about, oh, it's a long series. Then on the other hand, when they don't win, you know, you get guys like Leo coming out, well, you know, short series, anything can happen. Well, wait a second, I thought it was a long series. What is it, short, long? What are we doing here? You know, and those kinds of decisions, a don't take my ace and start him in game one, those are the kinds of decisions that can change your future in the playoffs very quickly. And that's why I just, you know, again, I'll say, I've 1 through 162, and Snicker does a great job for this organization. It's when you get in that phone booth of what the playoffs are that sometimes I question, you know? He doesn't have Keith Lockhart and Michael Tucker to start out against, you know, in a clinching game or whatever. You know what I mean? So that's why I've got him there. I've got Dan at number two, and probably not, you know, as much because of what Dan can do, but because I do trust their roster more, and they have won in spite of Dan. Obviously, they've gone to the Super Bowl in spite of Dan. You know, had a dominant offense, had a guy who had sacked the quarterback, and it made all the difference in the world. You know, made all the difference in the world. There's nothing about the Falcons and their roster that says they can't get back to the Super Bowl because Dan's been there. And Dan has been, you know, the coach for all of that. I do think that there are advantages Dan gives you when you get Monday through Saturday, but I don't think that you get the advantage, the game day advantage on Sunday, whether it's time management, timeouts, two-minute offense, you know, fourth down. You know, and they hired, you know, they hired that extra coordinator, whatever, the game manager coach, and it still didn't seem at times to make that much of a difference for a team that's back-to-back. And maybe, you know, maybe Dan seeing the light kind of in the second half of the year where turning over the defense, you know, maybe that's the best coaching move that he's made since he's been here. Crazy as that may sound, maybe that's the best coaching move that he's made is to get hands-off. For a guy who loves to be hands-on, you know, and still be hands-on on certain things and still, you know, going to be the final decision maker. But, you know, as far as allowing guys to run the defense and things like that, maybe that was the best decision that he made was to turn over the reins to somebody else and let a new set of eyes take a look at everything. So maybe that's enough to get it, you know, right, the ship rightened on it. But it is a roster that has been to the Super Bowl, at least the core group of those guys. And then number one, I think it's Frank DeBoer. And I think because I think they will give one thing about Atlanta United that they've shown is that they will always give the players and the money and everything that the coach needs to get what he gets, what he needs to win it. And I think that they've always shown that the organizational support behind them, they'll go out and get any player that they want by and large. You know, whereas we kind of get frustrated about, you know, why can't we get Mookie Betts or Nolan Arenado or this guy or that guy? Why can't we be in the mix for all of that? You know, anytime you hear a top guy, Atlanta United, within the soccer world like that, Atlanta United is right there in the mix. Atlanta United is right there, whether it's a Barco, whether it's a PT Martinez. When you talk about one of these guys that wants to come to MLS and play, they're always right in the mix for all of that. So I go Frank DeBoer 1, DQ 2, Snit 3, Lloyd Pierce 4. Jarvis, you had a list from earlier. Give us your four in order about what you see.
All right, so I started off with the fourth coach in this little pool we have here, Lloyd Pierce. Lloyd Pierce is the guy that I think has the least chance of getting that team to a championship. Like I stated earlier, I don't believe that he will be around to see these young guys come to fruition and get to that full, reach their full potential. Then next, I went to Frank DeBoer with Atlanta United, and I know a lot of people are probably saying, "Well, what the hell are you talking about, Jarvis?" And I know you know talked about that being up there for you. I just don't know what this team is going to look like without Joseph Martinez. That was the guy who is the catalyst for this team back in 2018 when they won that championship. And I think that it's going to be some time before we see this team reach this full potential, because I kind of gauge my list off of short term. So I put Atlanta United there at three. At two, I have a Dan Quinn coach team with the roster, just for the same reasons you just mentioned. Like, as far as the roster, I trust his roster. I think they have enough talent to be able to do something this year and go on a run with all that's going on. And my top team, man, I have the Braves, because I think in this shortened season, there are a lot of factors that go into play. And I think that talent is the thing that is going to be the key factor in being successful this year. And it's going to be really hard to mess that up if you have a lot of talent. And I know the Braves can do both of those things. They have a lot of talent, and there's a possibility they could mess this up. But I think the talent is going to win out. It's going to hide some of those factors that you just pointed out that Snicker can do in order to try to mess this up without even trying. But I think the Braves are number one because given the 60-game season, the shortened season, I think that talent is going to win out when it comes to where this season is and them having the best chance to win a championship.
You know, and it's like I said, I mean, when I look at the Braves, I mean, I don't, you know, it's not a talent thing. It's never been a talent thing with the Braves. I mean, do they make the moves I think that they should at times as far as, you know, really giving it as a go-for-it kind of moment? No. You know, they did in the 90s. I mean, they were, you know, listen, bringing in Gary Sheffield. You know, people question, you know, how can you bring in that guy? Well, you know, he had a season where he was 39 homers and 125 RBIs hitting about 320. You know, he had no issues playing with Bobby and all that. And that's where the strengths of this team. But, you know, they always brought in talent in the 90s. The Andres Galarragas and the Fred McGriffs and the Mark Teixeiras and the Gary Sheffields. You know, they all, you know, even in pitching, you know, bringing in Denny Nagel or Russ Ortiz or John Burkett or doing whatever they had to do to really strengthen and deepen their team as much as they needed. They were never afraid. Vinny Castilla, you know, they were never afraid to kind of go for it in those days. I mean, if the only move that they maybe never really went for was the idea of going after Barry Bonds, you know, that was kind of talked about. But they were always pretty much a go for it. Now, the problem is, you know, they had all that talent and didn't do much with it. You know, it's hard to imagine going back and looking at the rosters and the guys that were there. I mean, we know that they've got four Hall of Famers. Four Hall of Famers that they played with. Then mix in guys like, okay, Fred McGriff's borderline Hall of Fame. Gary Sheffield, you know, steroids is the only thing keeping him out of the Hall of Fame. 500 homers or what have you. But it's the only thing keeping him out of the Hall of Fame. He was a tremendous player. You know, Galarraga's not a Hall of Famer, but he was one of the best first basemen in baseball. Danny Nagel was a 20-game winner in Major League Baseball. I mean, they've had a lot of guys that when they brought them in weren't just, you know, guys that just filled out a roster. Had guys that were really, you know, some of the top guys at their position when they had them. And they didn't do nothing with them. Nothing. They won all those divisions, but it didn't translate into what's most important. You know, it took a guy who couldn't manage his way out of a paper bag in Mike Hargrove, you know, in a you know, again, maybe, you know, certainly the biggest underachiever of the 1990s, the Cleveland Indians, you know, to bring that first title. But look at those teams, 96, 2003. I mean, go look at some of the rosters on those teams. How'd they not win more? You know, there were a few constants, but, you know, the biggest ones sat in the dugout for all those years. So, interesting discussion. You can hit us up on our Twitter page at JMCH316 on Twitter. You can also hit us up on the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line 404-741-0929. We'll talk a little bit more about this Redskins situation. You know, I said at the very beginning of the show, I didn't think this would happen in my lifetime. But it does bring up an interesting sidebar to it. We'll talk about all that next. It is John Chuckwood Show, Sports Radio 910 The Game and on the Radio.com app.
Stand by me through the good times and bad times.
My, we're back at it on Sports Radio 910 The Game. This is John Chuck for show. Rolling right along through the Brown Liquor Music Hour. JR Sports Brief coming up at the top of the hour. 404-741-0929. That's the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. Leave us a comment. Also, too, social media at 929 The Game, at JMCH316, at Jarvis D90, and the radio.com app is how you listen to us when you're not in your vehicle. So, you know, obviously the biggest story of the sports world today is the fact that the Redskins have decided to change their name. They will no longer be called the Redskins, new logo, and all that kind of stuff. There's an article that talks to some of the former players. And it's interesting because, you know, the Redskins are not changing their name because they're moving to another city. They're not changing their name because they're embracing something new. They're changing their name because people think the name is derogatory and money spoke. Okay, let's call it what it is. They made a business decision. Okay, so what do you do with the Redskins from here on out? And what I mean by that is NFL Network, for instance, plays Super Bowls all the time. Redskins are one of the most storied franchises in the history of the NFL, right? From Sammy Baugh to, you know, all the way through the Super Bowls and Joe Gibbs. Don't forget Billy Kilmer took them to the Super Bowl. They're the team that lost to the undefeated Dolphins in the 73 Super Bowl. How do you address it? If the point of all this was that the logo and the name were insensitive, racist, whatever bigoted, whatever term people want to use, how are you going to move forward with that in the history books of the NFL? When NFL Network replays the broadcast of Redskins Cowboys, are they bleeping out every time they say Redskins? Are they, putting like the blue dot over the Redskins logo? Or, you know, I don't know if the scoreboard ever said Redskins Cowboys. Does that word get taken out? How do you play with the history of the franchise? Because you can't, you know, here's my thing. Everybody wants to have everything always. Well, we can still say Redskins because it was part of their past, but we just can't have it moving forward. Well, wait a second. You told me the reason. Why would you have anything that would promote that word if it was worthy enough to change the franchise? See again, this is where everybody wants to have it just one sort of way. Now, you've got guys that are all over the board on it. Daryl Green, I applaud Dan Snyder for what he's doing, trying to move us all forward. That's what I'm grateful for. I don't want anything but what's right and true and honest and full of integrity. I believe the majority of fans would agree with me. We acknowledge the pain in the nation toward a people. Now we're saying let's fix that. It's not a screaming and hollering moment. It's a come together and put common sense to bear and say, let's do what's right. You can have the jerseys, the helmets. Give me the new helmet. Give me the new jersey, and I'll put that on a wall. We've just got to start saying and seeing that human beings really do mean more than computers and money and trophies and jerseys and stuff. Okay, so let me ask you a question. Did Daryl Green ever not cash checks from the Redskins because he was offended by the name or thought that it was insensitive or whatever? See, this is the thing. Everybody tells me these things about, oh, it's offensive and this, that, and the other. Okay, then why did everybody collect checks for them? Well, it's a business. Okay, but you're telling me now, today, it means more. See, that's the part I don't understand is, don't tell me about we evolved. Don't be messing with that nonsense, okay? If it's a slur, it's a slur. And if it's derogatory, it's always derogatory, okay? Like, at no time in the history of mankind has the F word been thought of as proper grammar or English to say or use. We've gotten desensitized by it, but it doesn't mean that it's a proper speaking word to use. Always been that way. There are lots of words like that. But see, that's the part that I find funny. Well, we've got to come together and all that. Why didn't you come together in 1987? It wasn't like this wasn't talked about in 1987. Wasn't like people were saying, oh, yeah, Redskins is fine. People were saying it back then. Don't tell me we've evolved. That's a cop-out for, we don't want to have to address the elephant in the room of we didn't give a blank because we're getting paid millions of dollars. So are you telling me that it's okay to embrace its history of what they did because it's part of the NFL, or are you telling me that we wipe it away? That we wipe away history? Does that mean anybody who's got a statue with a Redskins jersey on it needs to come down? Because that seems to be what we do in today's environment. Doug Williams talking about it says, we played because that was our job and what we wanted to do. Players don't come thinking, I'm going to play for this slur name. That's not on their minds. All they know is they're playing in the NFC East and they're playing the Cowboys, the Giants, and the Eagles. Yeah, they're also understanding they get millions of dollars to play. He says, we won as Redskins. We won the game. But at the end of the day, it's about the players, and we still deserve our rings because we did it. The name didn't do it. That's all we can say. The name changes, but the city doesn't change, and the teams don't change, and the franchise doesn't change. It's just the name and the logo. It should not have an impact on the history of the organization. Okay, you can't have it that way, though, Doug. You can't tell me that the logo is so bad and the name is so bad that it has to be changed. It has to be changed. What I'm saying is, if that's what people are saying is, it has to be changed, you can't say, yeah, but it's okay what happened before. See, I don't understand that. It's been bad this, if you think it's been bad this whole time, then if you're somebody who's in the camp of, I've always been offended by the name and the logo, okay, then how do you embrace the history or the past of it? How do you do that? That's the part that people don't want to just kind of wrap their arms around. Again, as I said at the start of the show, I'll let you decide if you think it's racist or bigoted or whatever. You've had, you know, Indian, you know, nation groups on both sides of the argument for decades. For decades, you've had them on both sides of the argument. And the only reason it's come to this point is not because it's the right thing to do. It's not because of morality. It's not because we've evolved. Those are buzzwords. I get so tired when people hit me up on different things that we've evolved. No, we haven't. Have we evolved? Because we have more technology and more access to things? Right's right, wrong's wrong, whatever, you know, you want to stand on that. But when you put on NFL Network and they're replaying the history of the franchise, huh? Are they calling them Redskins? Are they bleeping all of that out? Are they blurring the logo? See, this is the thing. If you're telling me it is legitimately offensive, and that's what it is, let's just say that it is, then how do you embrace its history for it? Because we don't want to embrace history in anything else. We don't want to embrace history when it comes to Confederacy. So how do we embrace that then? If you're saying that this was, you know, denigrating to a certain, you know, class of people, then how do you embrace that? And I'll tell you how it's going to happen. They ain't going to do a damn thing. That's the reality. When you watch NFL Network, you know, in the off season, and they're playing, you know, or the 2 weeks before the Super Bowl, and they're going through all the Super Bowls, guess what? It's going to be Redskins, Dolphins in 73. It's going to be Redskins and Broncos, you know, in whatever that was, 87. It'll be Redskins and the Buffalo Bills. It'll be Redskins, Raiders. Redskins, Dolphins in 81. Because they'll pay it lip service. And it's true. Are they changing it for all the right reasons? I don't know. They're changing it. People are happy to see that. That's fine. I mean, again, I don't care about the Redskins name. It's just a matter of, if you're telling me something is offensive or racist or bigoted or whatever that it is, then why should it be embraced? Why should the Redskins logo or name be embraced at all? Or is that not the conversation that people want to have with all of it? So it's an interesting dynamic. And there are a couple of Redskins players in this article that said they're always going to be called. They're going to always call them the Redskins. Sure, that's who you played for. But they're trying to. It's funny reading the comments of Daryl Green. Well, I just want what's for a peace and equality and all that. Okay, that's fine. You and Ringo put your fingers up in peace and love, and we'll have flowers and all that kind of stuff. How do you embrace it? How do you embrace it? At least say, you know what? We took the money. We weren't worried about a name. At least say that, which is okay too. I'd rather they come out and say, you know what? It was the NFL. We love to play NFL. We wanted the millions of dollars. We weren't concerned about the name because we were thinking about, you know, our money and everything first. Okay, at least you'd be honest. At least it puts you in the honesty camp. All right, Love TKO. Going to wrap things up. Coming up top of the hour, JR Sports Brief. It's all next. It is John Chuckery Show, Sports Radio 910 The Game, and on your radio.com app.
To run my fingers through your hair, so come on and stay with me all night.
I wanna ride with you, baby,
all night long.
I wanna roll with you, lady,
feeling so strong.
I wanna ride with you, baby,
all night long. Rock and roll and roll and rock, make it sweet.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.